Truth and Transcendence. Brought to you by Yes, You Now, with Catherine Llewellyn. Truth and Transcendence, episode 54. With guest host this time, Tom Dennis. You might remember Tom from episode 32, where he came on and talked very beautifully about gender. Tom is CEO of Serenity in Leadership, and he hosts regular dialogue events with an array of inspiring guests and a video series on YouTube. And I was privileged to be invited along as a guest for one of Tom's video interviews, which you can watch on YouTube, and the link is in the show notes here. But I'm reproducing that here in audio form because I feel that the conversation is highly relevant for Truth and Transcendence listeners. So in this episode, we explore how our early life experiences mirror themselves in how we actually come at and approach our life practice and in our unique working style. We examine the leadership dichotomy of positivity and realism. We ask ourselves, what does love have to do with it? What is a type A wrangler? And what's the connection between the two? So it's actually quite a fun episode, this one. I really enjoyed it. I hope you enjoy it. And in the show notes, you'll find the video version link and also other links for where else you might want to go. So over to you, Tom.
I'm Tom Dennis, the CEO of Serenity in Leadership. We're premier conflict resolution, culture integration and change specialists, and we help businesses overcome challenges and achieve successful lasting outcomes whilst always putting their people at the heart of the business. Today, I'm delighted to welcome Catherine Llewellyn to our podcast. Catherine is a master humanistic psychologist, and she helps successful entrepreneurs, executives, and business owners master their full power and potential, leverage their opportunities, and elevate their lives. Wow. Hello, Catherine.
Follow that. Hello, Tom. Thanks for inviting me.
It's a real pleasure to see you again. So you describe yourself as a master humanistic psychologist and a type A wrangler.
That's right.
Help me understand what those terms mean.
Well, a type A wrangler is it's a term I came up with, actually, because I noticed over the years that I seem to have a sort of unusual facility for working with the type A person. And, you know, often practitioners say, you know, type A people are really difficult to work with, they will say, because they will say, type A's are rugged individualists. They know who they are. They are opinionated. They are willful. They are creative. They are fantastic. They are successful. They've got all sorts of qualities about them, which for a practitioner often can be challenging if what you want is a sort of a meek supplicant, you know, coming to you for your wisdom. But actually, I'm not that kind of practitioner. I actually like these people. I rate them. I appreciate the fact that they're out there doing what they're doing. I appreciate their autonomy, and I find them interesting. And I also find that they often have many other qualities within them, which, when added to their type A marvelousness, creates a very happy and successful contributive human being. So, you know, I'm very good at working with the type A's. And the word wrangler, I suppose, is a bit like if you think of the beautiful stallions running across the hills, you know, the type A is a bit like that. Very beautiful, totally uncontrollable, but fantastic if you can find a way of engaging with them. And for some reason, I'm very good at engaging with them. I like them. And they feel, you know, safe with me. And a humanistic psychologist, that's a bit of a, you know, if you put a group of humanistic psychologists in a room and ask them the question, what is humanistic psychology? And actually, we did actually do that at the Association of Humanistic Psychologists to celebrate the 50-year anniversary in a room to discuss that question for 3 days. the answer at the end was, it's hippie stuff. Peace, love, and understanding. And that's what humanistic psychology is. And a slightly more technical description is that it's it has a great respect for personhood. You know, the basic assumption that each and every individual has the potential to run their own lives, make their own choices, and grow and be infinite. So it's a bit of a yin-yang thing. You know, the humanistic psychology is a bit of a yin emphasis, and the Taipei wrangling is a bit of a yang emphasis.
So do you think that that's the peace and the love sort of thing is kind of the language that enables you to talk to the stallions?
It's what the peace and love thing is, what's in me. I may or may not actually talk to them about it. So I think they feel accepted as who they are. They can tell that I'm not trying to change them. I'm not trying to force them to bring up their feminine side or listen more, or I'm not trying to force them to be different from who they are, because I'm accepting them. And that comes from a place of love, actually. And so we all have hearts. We're all sensitive. Doesn't matter what personality type we have. We can all feel it when somebody is giving. There's a term called unconditional regard that we used in the humanistic world, which I know you're familiar with. It's that when you know you're being witnessed by somebody who unconditionally accepts you, respects you, and appreciates you as you are. And that's a really wonderful place. And I think the reason that works for me is because I genuinely feel that about these people. I'm not pretending to feel it.
Yeah. That sense of respect, which actually is so unusual these days. It's really refreshing, but it's more than refreshing. It's affirming.
Yeah. Yeah. And of course, to get to a place where I'm able to do that, I, of course, have had to go on a long journey myself in order to be in a place where I fully respect myself, because I can't offer that to somebody else without first having that relationship with myself. So any experienced or successful, really good humanistic psychologist will be somebody who's done a long, long journey within in order to come to terms with aspects of themselves and actually really ground their self-love, which then enables them to be in a position to offer that to others.
And that underpins, I think, so much of the work that I think both of us try and do. So very important. Thank you. So I understand you had a bit of a bohemian upbringing and a variety of catalytic encounters with radical thought leaders.
Yes.
Can you tell us about how this has shaped you?
Well, it's a good question, because I've no idea how I would have turned out otherwise, because it was sort of fully absorbing. I'm sure it's contributed to me being non-conformist. You know, I learned very, very early on, I learned that the idea of trying to conform to what everybody else was doing or what everyone else thinks was just not done. It just wasn't done in the circles I was growing up with. And I was surrounded by all these extraordinary people who would just sort of turn up at the house, often without warning, and often with several other people in the car who we hadn't previously met. And we'd just hang out, and we'd have all sorts of interesting conversations and games, and it was just fairly wild. There was a movie that came out a few years ago called Running with Scissors. I don't know if you saw it. It was a psychologist and his children and the upbringing they had. And running with scissors was a brilliant metaphor, because for us, running with scissors was what you're supposed to do. You know, the whole business of doing the thing which other people would consider to be risky or consider to be not sensible or a bit out there is what we just did. You know, I remember my father started talking to us about the notion that we don't actually know for sure that we've been here as long as we think we have, right? And you're six years old, right? And someone's saying this to you. And you're saying, well, what do you mean? He said, well, for all you know, you just popped into existence right now. What do you mean? What about all my memories? Yeah, you just popped into existence with all the memories, as if they were real right now. This was a normal conversation in our household when I was six. Now, for most people, that's not normal, you know. And there was another, and he would take us to sun clubs and communes and all kinds of different things, which we would just do. And I remember one time I was dropped off for the weekend with a lady, Dr. Rachel, we called her. You may have heard of Dr. Rachel Pinney, who did an awful lot of work with children and nonviolent communication and so on in the 50s and 60s. She was a family friend. I had no idea that she was, you know, someone. But I mean, dropped off her funny little wooden house in the woods and spend the weekend there. And she would do experiential processes with me, you know, at the age of eight. And one of these apparently became part of her body of material, which is one where the adult and the child are sitting together. And the adult says, right, we're going to do Rachel half hour, Catherine half hour. And Rachel half hour, Rachel decides what we're going to do for half an hour, and Catherine does it and plays fully with what Rachel wants. And the other half hour, Catherine half hour, is the other way around. So there I was at the age of eight, being told to and encouraged to learn how to take responsibility for what I wanted to ask for, communicate it, involve somebody else. And when it was their turn, it was their turn. And it's really advanced for a child. But we were just, this is just normal. You know, there was a whole bunch of things we did. And I think it's made me more nonconformist, more adventurous, more free thinking, more curious, more imaginative, but also more willful, more unmanageable, more annoying. I could go on.
Yes. Yeah. Well, that does explain some of my experiences with you when I first exactly. met you, and latterly when we worked together. So yeah,
exactly.
I have this image now of you in this sort of who lived in the woods? It was a Goldilocks or whatever in this little wooden house far away in the woods.
Yeah.
And actually that evokes what's that book, the Women Who Run with Wolves.
Yes that's right. And another book, Among the Bohemians. I read this book and then I lent it to my brother and then I waited, and then he phoned up and said, this is our life. It's in this book.
So, okay. So, you spent many years working with top business leaders in the corporate world, aligning fiscal success with values-driven leadership and culture. Nowadays, you choose to work directly with clients. What made you leave the corporate world behind?
Well, I'd been working in the corporate world for about 40 years by then, and you know, I was not as young as I once was. I wanted a bit of a change of pace. I wanted to move on. I felt like I'd done my bit in that particular context. You know, it was great fun, really interesting. I feel like I did a lot of good work that, and a lot of people benefited from it. And also it's hard work, you know, all the travel and dealing with all the admin of dealing with corporates. I partly stopped because of the admin, which I could do without. But also another element of it, which in one way empowered the work, but in another way was something that perhaps sometimes we could do without, is the third person in the room that's always there, kind of metaphorically, when you're working with corporate clients, because the company is paying for the work. And so therefore, the work must deliver something to the company. Now, obviously, if somebody is successful in their work, which of course is what I wanted them to be, it will benefit the business. But the business won't necessarily recognize that unless it's kind of explained to them or couched in a certain way, or measured in a certain way. So there's always that element, which, like I say, on one hand, it empowered the work because it helped focus. But in another way, they came and I thought, let's just let that go. And I kind of moved on. And, partly due to my upbringing, I imagine, I'm one of these people who I will move on when it feels like time to move on, even if I've no idea where I'm going. So I just kind of let it drift away. And then I had quite a long sabbatical before coming into my next phase of whatever I was going to do.
So how would you describe the work that you do now?
Well, it's now branded as Yes, You Now. And that really says it, which is it's about working with people who are successful already and who for some reason can see some sort of opportunity for themselves or for their business or very often both. And they've recognized that they themselves are their own greatest asset for capitalizing on that opportunity. So this is not everybody. This is a minority of people who fulfill all of those characteristics. And those people will very often say, right, it matters to me how quickly I capitalize on this opportunity. And it matters to me what it feels like and how I experience doing that. So I want to do this in a way that's as fulfilling for me as possible. And I want to grow because I'm my own greatest asset. I want to work myself as an asset. And I think I would like some expert help with that. So that's the kind of work I'm doing now. And the way that it's applied is a little bit different from how it was under the Inspiring Change banner, because now I work with people for shorter periods of time over a shorter duration, because we can jump into it much, much faster now because we don't have to worry about all the corporate stuff. It's their business anyway. So if they want to tell people in the business about it, that's up to them. But our work is not predicated on that in any way. It means we can just literally have a conversation and start work the next week and just get on with it. And we can jump in and jump through it in a much, much more leveraged way, I would say.
So without giving away any sort of particulars, what would be an example of the way that you would work with someone now?
Well, I'm often working with people on Zoom now. So I'd have an initial conversation with somebody to find out why they might want to work with me. And we'd have a conversation about, what that is. Generally, I go away and have a think about it and come back and say, well, okay, I suggest we try this. I suggest we try 3 months where we meet fortnightly or 6 months where we do this or whatever. And this is how much time I suggest we spend together. And these are the levers I suggest we focus on, given what you've told me about yourself and your situation, in order to accomplish what you want to accomplish. So it's tailored to each person, and it's working using whatever levers they already have, their existing strengths, their existing resources and opportunities. How do we leverage those to help them bring out more potential and accomplish even more going forwards? So that's kind of open-ended. And for each person, it's very, very different. Is that at all helpful, or is that just too vague?
Well, I mean, clearly these things are very personal. Well, let's move on and see if we come back to it. I don't know. What do you think are the most important qualities good leaders need to have?
I think at the moment, I'm very tuned into how things are at the moment in the world. And I sort of look at all these things from that perspective. And I think at the moment, what leaders need to be doing really is thinking for themselves. And they need to be encouraging other people to think for themselves. And they need to be presenting themselves and showing up as profoundly trustworthy and followable. And the reason I say that is because they've done studies recently about the degree to which people trust, for example, their government leadership or corporate leadership. And the trust levels are really, really low at the moment collectively in relation to that. Now, human psychology is such that sometimes we forget the distinction between an actual human being and a group of human beings. So if our trust levels in relationship to leaders as a group is low, then we will naturally, without even deciding to do so, project that onto any individual leader who's in front of us, which means that individual leader who may be absolutely gold, you know, wonderful human being, wonderful ethics, brilliant strategist, etc., that person is then carrying the shadow of that mistrust. Mm-hmm. So a big challenge for leaders right now is to actually overcome that and show up and connect with their people in such a way that their people can actually, I may distrust leaders as a group, but this guy or woman, I can trust because they are real, they are authentic, they are making sense. And also they're thinking for themselves. So they are actually a real leader. They're not just a follower. And so I people want to follow people who are real leaders, not followers.
So do you think that aligning purpose and business and personal values is part of this mix? It's very important right now. And if so, why?
Yeah, I do. And I think that's important always, because even if it's only because it's more efficient, you know, if our personal values, business values and purpose are at odds, that creates an inner conflict, which is a drain on energy. And it means that any action we take is only partial in its success. So it's always important. But I think especially important right now, because we're all carrying a certain amount of depletion as a result of the last 2 years. Some of us are personally, directly depleted, energetically, emotionally, mentally. Most of us, if we're not depleted ourselves, have people in our lives who we love who are depleted. Yeah. And that means there's a lot of energy involved in just staying afloat and just keeping going. Now, for most of us, this is on a subconscious level because, you know, certainly in the UK and generally in the West, I would say, we are pretty rugged, we're resilient, we'll keep going, which is great. But sometimes, unfortunately, it means that we ignore when we're depleted. So our imagination is reduced, our resourcefulness is reduced, our intuition's reduced, our flexibility is reduced. So all the more reason why we need to be in alignment, so that we've got that sense within us that everything is all going in the right direction and that all aspects of our lives are supporting each other. And therefore, when we take a step, you know, to have breakfast, to go to work, to go out with friends, to talk to our people, to write, to do a podcast, if we feel that everything's all in alignment, we've got a much better chance of actually using the energy we have happily and productively and being fulfilled as a result. And we're also that much more attractive to our people in terms of being trustworthy, linking back to the previous one. And we're easier to be around. We're more fun to be around. And we're more encouraging in a world where so many people are basically fielding despair.
So the need or the importance of having a purpose becomes much greater.
I don't think the importance of having a purpose is any greater now than it ever is. I think the conditions we're in are more difficult. And I think our own personal state is probably less well-resourced. So therefore, if we want to achieve our purpose, it's a bit harder, I suppose, is what I'm saying. And we may have to work a little bit harder to clarify what our purpose is. And in fact, our purpose may have to morph in response to the new circumstances.
That's an interesting one. I think we could get quite gritty on this one.
Please, go ahead.
Well, I don't know. Because I think purpose is it's the why. It's why do I get out of bed? What is it that I'm going to do at a personal level? And when I get into the work, the office, why do I resonate with what this business is trying to do? Do I know what it's trying to do? And do I agree with it? Am I fully behind it?
Mm.
And I think actually this is a very new concept in a lot of organizations.
Yeah.
I don't think many have explored this at all. But because we're under so much pressure, because there's so much grief right now and a sense of a lack of trust, having a why, having a reason to go to work and to give your energies to an organization, I think it's taken on a whole new level of meaning.
Right. Yeah, I see what you're saying. Yeah. I suppose I'm thinking about it from the point of view of the senior leaders for whom they always must have a purpose because they've got people following them. I think perhaps the people more junior in organizations, what you're saying, I'm listening to what you're saying and I'm thinking that it's different at different levels in the organization. Because I think if you're a leader who's not in touch with your purpose, you're going to fail regardless of what's happening in the world. Whereas if you are in a more junior position in an organization, you may still succeed because you're not the person leading the organization, you know, within your aspect. But I hear what you're saying. I think it's a very important point. You know, when we have a sense of purpose, that can enable us to overcome obstacles and difficulties that we can't overcome when we don't have a purpose.
The point here, I think, is that, leaders have got to have a purpose, but that purpose doesn't necessarily enroll other people.
No.
That purpose may be that they're satisfying a drive that was created by their father when they were 6 years old.
Yes.
You know, yeah. I have always got to satisfy my father. So and the whole drive behind that individual has created a huge empire. I mean, there's stacks of examples of that. But that's not something that people working in the organization will understand. And there's no reason why they would get behind that. And that's why there's so much fear in so many organizations, because the people at the top are driving for reasons that don't actually resonate and don't actually make much sense for everybody else.
I think that certainly happens. I also think something that happens is that people have a values-driven purpose and sometimes don't engage with their people. So their people don't have a direct experience of that and therefore don't. You know, same similar results in the sense, that one was almost sadder because the leader's trying to do good and people aren't. But, well, as you know from your work, there are so many different variations, aren't there, on this. And
yes,
I think my main thing is the importance of recognizing the difference in the time that we're in and the importance of responding to that in a way which serves, you know, which will serve the need of the day. Because I feel like we individually have certain needs now which have been heightened because of the last period, and collectively as well. And I like to think that leaders want to be part of the solution to that. You know, and I work on the basis that leaders want to be part of that solution, and therefore how can they do that?
That's the humanistic part, I guess.
Yeah.
It's very positive, and it's great to hear you say it in that way.
Yeah, and the ones who don't want to be part of the solution, I mean, I can only work with a certain number of people at a time, and same is true for all other humanistic practitioners, including yourself. So I'm happy for the guys who want to be part of the solution to give me a call, and the ones who don't want to be part of the solution do not need to give me a call.
Never the realist. Yes. Okay. So we ought to wrap this up, really. But can you give our listeners a couple of top tips on how to meet opportunities head on and activate our full potential? And clearly, everybody's unique, but I don't know.
I would say the first one is decide to be somebody who is learning how to do that. So decide to make it a project that you want to learn how to meet your opportunities and What was the rest of the question? Elevate your life.
Yes, activate their full potential.
Activate their full potential. Yeah. Yeah. Put your creative learning mind to the question. You know, rather than look outside to how do you do it, use the fact that you have or found your own answer to things all through your life. Apply that faculty to those questions. And on your own, you can discover a lot. On your own, you can observe how you've already been activating your potential and how you've been leveraging your opportunities already to now, which you've been doing really well. So have a look at how you've done that and how could you do that more? And the second suggestion is to call me on 0770-267-230 and have a conversation at no charge, which you will either get massive value just from that conversation, or you will decide, and I will decide, we'll decide together to work together.
Well, there you go. You've taken me to the next thing is, how do people get in touch with you, Kevin?
Yes, call me, call or WhatsApp if you're overseas. 0044-770-267-230 if you're overseas, or in the UK, 0770-267-230. If you'd rather find out more about me without committing to a phone call, you can listen to my podcast, Truth and Transcendence, which is an ampersand in the middle, on which Tom, your good self, were one of the early guests. In fact, the first guest. That's an excellent podcast, in my opinion. And my website is yesyounow.today. And you can find out more on there.
Thank you. It would have been fun to give ourselves a lot more time and to explore some of these things. I think one of the key things that certainly I think is so important that I'm hearing you say is about self-awareness. For leaders to be self-aware and in a way that I suspect has never been the necessity. I think there are leaders out there who are quite aware just because of who they are.
Yeah.
But there's an awful lot that aren't. And it's so much easier when you're doing things from a sort of a foundation of strength and awareness, as opposed to kind of ricocheting off the walls.
Or just being overly self-sufficient. I think sometimes you know, people can go an awful long way without getting any assistance or support from outside, and can be just incredibly effective and successful. One of my clients, a CEO, really wanted me to work with some of his board members, but he didn't want to work with me himself. And every 3 months, we'd have a catch-up chat for half an hour. We'd talk about everyone else except him. And he was really successful and good at what he did. He recognized that I was really helping his people, but he just didn't have any appetite for it. Just didn't want to do it. Yeah. And he was okay with that, you know, so I had to be okay with that. But there was an awful lot more he could have had for himself and for the business had he actually been interested in a little bit more, the sort of expansion you could get when you get somebody to help you temporarily.
Yeah. So there's a challenge out there. What's your stretch?
Yeah.
Where's that level of discomfort which will take you to the next level?
Yeah. And what's the appetite for it? It's like that flare of enthusiasm, I think. That physis is that word. I don't know if you came across that word. It goes with libido, mortado, and physis. Physis being the natural urge within us to grow, like an enthusiasm for growth, a natural force. And that is of great interest to me.
Yeah. I like that. Physis.
Mm.
Word of the week.
Yes.
Catherine, thank you very, very much indeed.
My absolute pleasure, Tom.
It's been great to talk to you and to hear your viewpoints, because they are, well, they're grounded in love and respect, which I really hear in what you say. Love and respect for the people that you work with, and I think that's probably one of the reasons a lot of people want to work with you. So it's great. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. So thank you so much to Tom for that wonderful conversation, which I greatly enjoyed. I hope you enjoyed listening to it. And as you will have just heard, all sorts of questions arose during the conversation, which I think is absolutely natural when you're talking about anything to do with human potential and psychology, because it really is a bit of a mystery how it all happens. We don't fully understand it. And to me, that's part of the joy of it, part of the adventure. So if you'd like to know more about Tom and what he's up to, please listen to Truth and Transcendence, episode 32, or you can go to Tom's website, which is serenityinleadership.com, and that information is in the show notes. I've also popped in the show notes the video version link for this episode, where you can watch us talking about this. The content's exactly the same, but where you can watch us talking about it. And if you have questions about my work and my approach to my work, in light of the fact that it is really not an easy thing to explain, I've actually put a variety of opportunities on my website to help people get to grips with it. So if you go to yesyounow.today, you will find at the top a short video, and there's an opportunity there to sign up for my video series, which explains exactly why people choose to elevate their lives and exactly how we do it, in as much as it's possible to explain that. And a bit further down the page, you'll find there's a questionnaire that you can complete and send in. And the difference with this questionnaire is you won't get an automated response. What you'll get is me sitting down, reading through your answers personally, and then coming back to you privately with my observations and comments. So what that does, that gives you the experience of doing the questionnaire, which is quite enlightening in itself. And secondly, you get my insights and observations to add to your observations. And thirdly, you get a sense of how I come at these sorts of topics. And if you then reach the point where you feel like to talk to me, you'll find on that page a link for scheduling a free consult session at a time that suits you. So that's quite juicy. There's quite a lot there for you to take in if you are curious and would like to find out more. So thank you again for listening to this episode. I really appreciate your ongoing support and presence tuning in to Truth and Transcendence. Please do go on to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and any other podcast app that you like to use, and rate, review, share, tell your friends. Thank you very much. Have a wonderful week, and I will catch you next week. You've been listening to Truth and Transcendence, the regular weekly podcast from Yes, You Now with Catherine Llewellyn. For more information, head to yesyounow.today/podcast.